Well, good morning. Give yourself a round of applause for getting here this morning. Having had raised five kids and two grandkids, just the idea that you would get anywhere on time without your pants being turned inside out, it's really a kind of a surprising thing. I got a text from my mom this morning. My mom lives in Colorado, and she sent me this text. Good news, Bonnie had a baby this morning. Don't know the gender yet, so no name. It's a calf. My mom lives on a farm. This is what 2 days ago it was. Cajun had a white calf today, but we don't know if it's a bull or heifer. Name to come later. These are the texts I get from my mother. My prayer is that when Harrison and his wife's baby comes, that they'll know which gender it is. So what I'd like to do this morning is hopefully I'm going to introduce my family to you. And so this is my family here, and that's my wife, Susan. We met here in Searcy 38 years ago, and we've been married 36 years. We have five children. The two in the middle, our son Jerome, got married the 29th of September to beautiful Whitney Parks. And so that's our latest daughter-in-law. I'll tell you a little bit about this in a little bit, our family. But I want you to start with me with family in the New Testament. I want you to start with me with Mary and Joseph. And what we're going to work on in this first session this morning is who is raising who. Now, I know you know this passage, but we're going to read it together anyway. So, every year, Jesus' parents went up to Jerusalem for the festival of Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to custom. You know, this passage is packed with all kind of triggers, isn't it? You know, the idea that they're going to church regularly, you know. Some of you, your elderly relatives, your grandparents, your parents, say, are you going to church regularly? Are you taking those kids to church? But see, Mary and Joseph taking the kids to church, right? Their oldest son got it started off right. He's 12, and you know, if you go to church and they're 12, you know, they're almost adults. And so, you know, they've got to, you know, be making that commitment to the Lord. And this was their custom. So apparently really good parents. And after the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, this is where the wheels kind of come off. The boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were completely unaware of it. My wife, if she was here, I wish she was here with us, but she tells the story of she's a music teacher. She went to school here in Searcy and then became a music teacher. And this one morning, she had this music production on her mind. And the two oldest kids were already at school. The two youngest, we only had four at the time, were there. And she gets in the van and she is singing the music. I know some of you are big music people. She's singing it on the way to school because she taught at the same elementary school where our kids went to school. It wasn't until she got to school, finally turned it off, felt good about the music, told everyone to get out of the van, when she realized she had left our two youngest children on the porch at home. True story. Yeah, she drove home very quickly and found them in the backyard playing. So, hey, no harm, no foul. And but they thought he was in their company, see, so they traveled on for a day and then began looking for him. I've had times like that with a 12-year-old. If they survive a day, I might start looking for them again. But and then they begin looking for him among their relatives and friends. And when they did not find him, they went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts. Now, you got to admit, Jesus got to be somewhat resourceful because he has found a place to sleep and eat and use the restroom for 3 days. And so sitting among the teachers, listening to them, asking them questions, everyone who heard him was amazed at this, understanding his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this?" Now, if I'm a resourceful 12-year-old, I might remind them that they left me. You know, you guys are the ones that left, right? But this is Jesus, see? And so, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." He replies, "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know? Didn't you know?" How many of you have said the phrase that somewhere along the line in your parenting, wherever stage you are, "I had no idea"? I had no idea it could be like this. I had no idea it could be this tough. I had no idea it could be this expensive. I had no idea I could be this tired. Have you been there? I'd love to know how many of you in the room have children under the fourth grade. Raise your hand if you got them under the fourth grade. Wow, that's a lot. Awesome. Over the fourth grade. All right. Along the way, have you noticed that early on you pick out their individuality? He's so like you. I mean, when they're misbehaving, right? And then so like me when they're behaving, right? You notice their individuality? How many of you were as prepared for independence? Mobility's a funny thing, isn't it? When we first have these little ones in our house, you know, it just seems like the whole world just gets flips upside down. Who knew they had to eat so often? Who knew that as often as they eat, they also use the restroom, right? Who knew all of this? But pretty soon, if you're astute, you figure out you're still pretty much in control. Where your kids go, when they go, when they're little, they're kind of just that, they're attached to you. Ladies, attached at the hip. Right? And so wherever you go, they go. So if they want to go somewhere and you don't want to go, they don't go. I'd like to go to Sally's birthday party, but you don't like Sally's mom, and so she's not actually going to Sally's birthday party, right? I've been at this parenting thing for a while, and now we're on grandparenting, right? At some point, they get this mobility thing down. Oh, I know, it starts with rolling over and crawling and walking, but it hits mainstream when they start driving, when they're involved in sports, and you just feel like a chauffeur going one place to the next, to the next, to the next. Can you relate to that? So we thought we were in control. That's when we recognized their individuality. Now it seems like we're out of control when we're recognizing their independence. Here's the trouble with that. When we're early parents, we get in the rut of believing we're in control, and then we expect that that's how it should stay all the way through. So when they start exercising their control, we find ourselves believing they're rebelling, that they shouldn't be doing this, that they shouldn't be thinking for themselves. They shouldn't have their own thoughts unless they run them by us first. They should like the people we like and like the things we like. They should enjoy the food we cook. They should like the church we go to. Even if we don't, they should like it, right? If we pick a sport over another, they should like that. They should see the wisdom of those choices. If they end up going to the university we felt was best, they should love the fact all the way through, even if it's a terrible experience, it's because they have a problem. But I think it's fascinating here that Jesus says, didn't you know? But what's the very next phrase that the writer adds? They didn't know. They didn't understand. This is part of the conundrum of parenting, is we feel like there's so much we ought to know. How many of you have called someone, an older sister in the church, or a mother or father, a grandmother, and said, my baby's doing this, I don't know what to do. Especially on that first one. Should we take him to the emergency room? By the fourth one, no, I can set a broken leg. I can do that. put him up here on the kitchen counter. I can do that. I saved the splint from the last one, right? It's also very difficult to admit you don't know what you're doing, especially when it's your child, because as a parent, then we feel like we're failing. Someone says, well, didn't you see the signs? I didn't know what to look for. Is this resonating a little bit? And here in this text of the Holy Family, right? God chose this mom. Surely he vetted her. I mean, didn't God do a little background work? I mean, he got myriads of angels. All right, fan out across the planet. Let's see if we can find a good one. Well, I've got some suggestions. I've found several. Well, let's run them by. Let's see. Let's take them through quality control. Check their background. Surely God knew that Mary and Joseph were going to be kind of like us. Probably really well-meaning parents with a lot we don't know. There are two postures of parenting that end up getting embedded in us, and I want to just give them to you very quickly. The first posture is that we should be in control of our kids. The second one is we ought to know what we're doing. What does someone say? You need to get control of your boy. Hey, is that your kid? Yeah, you get control of your kid. Have you ever heard someone say that? Have you ever said it? So what's the assumption? You ought to be in control. And if some parent ever says, oh, I just can't control him, what do we think of that parent? Well, then you shouldn't have had kids. Have any of you heard any of this? So what's the assumed posture? You should be in control of your kids. What's the second posture? If you knew how to make them, you ought to know how to raise them. And if you don't know how to raise them, you shouldn't have had them. So what's the second posture? You're supposed to know what you're doing. People will say when they get married, well, you know, it's been about 5 years. I think my wife and I are going to have kids. Son, have you thought about it? Do you know what you're doing? And what do we say? Yeah, I think we do. How many kids you got? None. You have no clue as to what you're doing. My dad used to say, never ask a teenager what was you thinking, because if they were, they wouldn't have done it. Don't ask them what they were thinking, because if they were thinking, so, my wife and I started having children somewhat early. Because you came early, this is a true story, this is exactly what happened. Our oldest son was born 1 year to the day from our 1 year anniversary. This is the truth. We were in school, had one semester to go. My wife sang with a chorus at Harding. The director was Dr. Kenneth Davis, Uncle Bud. Some of you that are older will remember this guy. He was a former Marine. He was incredibly disciplined and dedicated. My wife, on our anniversary, our 1 year anniversary, was with the chorus at their summer retreat. For 3 days, they went to some camp up north of here where they were supposed to be together and bond and build the chorus, you know, the unity of the chorus. I thought, my wife is gone on our 1 year anniversary. So I called up to the camp. I got Dr. Davis on the line. I said, Dr. Davis, I said, we're married. It's my 1 year anniversary. Is there any way that I could come up and take Susan out to dinner? He said, yes. 1 year later, to the day our son was born, dinner was great. Come on. Did I know what I was doing? Did we know what we were doing? So the assumption that you're supposed to be in control and know what you're doing. Now, real quickly, look back through the text. Did Mary and Joseph have control of their boy? No. And did they know what they were doing? No. Guess what? Both of those postures are failed postures, and they're not biblical postures. Yet they're embedded. So what is the posture? Well, Jesus went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. Everyone out loud together, ready? And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Isn't it stunning that somehow a good kid came out of a family of parents who did not know what they were doing and didn't have control of their boy? And somehow a good kid came out of it. Well, he had good genes, you might say. He was God's son. Well, James turned out all right too, didn't he? You see, James ends up being an elder in the church. We all know how that floats. How's your boy? Our boy's an elder in the church. Oh, you must have been great parents. Well, you know, the truth is we didn't have control and we didn't know what we were doing, but it turned out all right. Well, tucked away in here is a posture of parenting, and this is where I want us to start the day, and hopefully if you don't get anything else out of the day, you'll get this. Here's the posture we see in Scripture. Are you ready? It's actually in this verse. It's a four-letter word at the end of that first line. He went down to Nazareth with them. The posture of good parenting is faithfulness. Faithfulness. That you are faithful to your children and faithful to the process of parenting. Did they know what was going on? No. Did they feel out of control? Yes. But at the end of the day, how does it kind of play out? They go home together. Now, I want you to think about this with me. How many of you, either in your own family or with dear friends, have a child that in one way or another was born with some challenges? Anyone, right? So what are some of those challenges that a child can be born with that you are aware of? What are some challenges? Yeah, so autism is a challenge, right? What else? Just name the ones you know. Okay, so a physical challenge, right, of some kind, right? What else? Psychological challenges. What about Down syndrome, right? Would we admit that these are challenges that a parent will now discover they don't know that much about, and they're certainly not in control? We have a friend who had a child who had their first open heart surgery at 3 days old. They're not in control. The other day I was on a flight, I looked up and a girl from our church who's a flight attendant, it's the first time that I've ever flown on a flight where she was a flight attendant. Some of you saw I posted this picture online, beautiful girl. When she was 5 years old, she went to the dentist. The dentist was astute and paying attention. The dentist saw a spot on her gums, said that day, I'd like you to go over to Eggleston, which is a children's hospital of Emory University Hospital, Atlanta. The parents were kind of like shocked. What do we do, right? Dad was an out-of-town salesperson. He was up in Chattanooga. Mom calls dad, says, I've got to take Victoria to the hospital. They go over to the hospital. Within about a week, they've diagnosed a super rare form of very aggressive cancer. And within a few weeks, they've removed her left jaw, the upper left jaw, lower right jaw, the whole roof of her mouth. And now for the next several years, they're going through reconstructive surgeries after they cure the cancer. So what were the first two postures? I'm in control and I know what I'm doing. Where do those go on that afternoon when the dentist tells you to go over to Eggleston? Poof. But what do you have now? What does the word with mean now to a mom and dad that don't leave her side? Right? So what's the posture? Faithfulness. Well, let me make my case a little further. Let's go back to the Garden of Eden, right? So you have a family in the Garden of Eden. You got a good dad, right? Who's the dad in the Garden of Eden story? God, right? How many of you would think he would be a fairly good, pretty good dad, right? What has he got going for him? Right? Exactly. Say it again. He's omniscient, so he actually is right about everything, right? Everything he thinks is just right on the money. What's another thing that God has going for him? He's omnipresent, so he's everywhere, so no kid can complain, my dad wasn't there when I was, you know. Eve and I were playing checkers, and I won. Dad wasn't there to see it. You know, oh, no, God's everywhere. He's omnipresent. So he's always right. He's always there. Got two kids, you know, boy and a girl. Got the boy first, very happy about that. So if God, here's what I'm thinking. God had an editor problem with the Bible. He had an editing problem. Because see, if he'd have stopped at Genesis 2, just stopped there. What a story. God has these two kids, you know, they grow up together. It's a great story. They love each other. Nice garden to live in. And then pick back up at Revelation 20 and 21. Because you see, the editor includes Genesis 3 through Revelation 19. Wow, what a wipeout. I mean, God's first kids just drive off the ledge. His first grandson kills his second grandson. Have you thought about that? Cain is who to God? Well, if Adam is his boy, who's Cain? It's his grandson. And God goes to his grandson and says, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. You don't want to do this. It's crouching at your door. It's trying to get a hold of you. Don't do it. Even God's intervention doesn't stop Cain. What do you think of God's family? What do you think of God's family? See, one of the fascinating things I've discovered along the way is that we have this habit of photoshopping. How many of you photoshop? Come on. You know, you take a picture, you got like nine of them. You're taking it and you're pinching your phone to see whose eyes were open, who was smiling. Do I look fat in that picture? Is that my good side? No, do I? Oh, I don't like that. Or how many of you say, don't post that. If you post that, I'll kill you. So why do we Photoshop? It's because we want to make sure that we present our family in such a way that it looks like we know what we're doing and we're in control, that we're competent. God is terrible at photoshopping. He's terrible at it. Because you see, if God was good at photoshopping, he'd have left Genesis 3 out about his kids. And then he'd have left Genesis 4 and 5 out. And let's just take a journey down through this pathway. How many of you work in children's ministry? Serve in children's ministry? Volunteer in children's ministry? Okay. So, you know, you're out front. How many of you have served as greeters for the church? You know, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Wasn't that nice to have the greeters here this morning? So, you know, you're serving in the greeting ministry. And in walks this lady with two kids. She's an older lady, so you know you've been trained by the greeting team. You know, don't assume it's a grandmother or mother. People don't like to be, you know, confused that way, right? She's going to feel like she looks older and everything. So this lady walks in. She needs the children's ministry and she needs a teen ministry. So she introduces herself. You know, hey, how are you? My name's Sally. What's your name? My name's Sarah. Oh, that's so nice. You two boys. What are the names? Isaac and Ishmael. Right? And when you looked at Ishmael, you thought he doesn't really look like Sarah. He has a little different complexion than her other boy, right? Well, then, you know, dad walks in, right? Abraham walks in. What's your name? Abraham. Oh, good biblical name. That's great. You know, must be a Christian family, right? You know, and then you notice this other woman kind of straggles in a little bit behind him. Hi, what's your name? Hagar. Oh, how exotic. Where are you from? Family's from Egypt. And then you start noticing, Ishmael looks more like Hagar than Sarah. Well, you decide to be a good Christian sister, and so you're going to take Sarah out for lunch. So you take her out for lunch. You say, you know, it was so good to meet the family on Sunday. And did they have a good time? Youth ministry was good. Children's ministry was good. Yeah, it was great. I'm glad you had a good time. Tell me a little bit about the family. Oh, we had a hard time getting pregnant. You know, it really took us a long time. And you start doing the math. And you're like, you must be talking about Isaac, but you have two boys. So Ishmael, how does Hagar fit in? That's when afterward you call an elder and say, I'm resigning from the greeting committee. But you go back the next Sunday. This elder, you know, encourages you to stay with it. The next Sunday in walks this lady and her, apparently a single mom, walks in with these twins. Hi, what's your name? My name's Tamar. Oh, that's great, great, great to meet you, Tamar. That's nice. Huh? Twin boys. Yeah, yep, yep, yep. And then you see this older gentleman walk in behind Tamar, you know. The older gentleman walks in. Hey, how you doing? What's your name? Judah. Oh, it's so good to meet you. Tamar, is Judah your father? No, that's my husband. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. No, there's nothing about that. I mean, age difference is love, you know, it's all good, you know. So you decide to take her to lunch. Tamar, you know, tell me how you and Judah met. Well, you know, that's a story. Tamar's a pretty straight shooter. She says, he was my father-in-law twice, and then he was looking for a prostitute, and I was dressed like one, and that's how we hooked up. Is this not the story? This is when you actually decide to quit going to church. But you call an elder, you come back the next week, right? You walk in, and then that week is when you meet Moses and his three wives. The following week is when David and Bathsheba come in, right? And then finally you get a break because a single lady comes to church. She's a very beautiful single lady, but you're feeling secure that day. You like the clothes you've got on. You greet her. Her name is Esther. And so you take Esther out to lunch. Say, Esther, are you single? Kinda. Are things on the rocks? Well, no, I'm married, but it's kind of one of those deals where it's a harem, so you got to share them kind of a thing. You do realize this is God's family I'm talking about. And these aren't the lowlifes. These people actually made God's Facebook page. Abraham is the father of the faithful. Jesus is the lion of the tribe of Judah. Moses is the lawgiver. Jesus is the son of David. So what kind of parent is God? Doesn't he have control over his kids? Well, see, God's posture is faithfulness. God is faithful to his children. And God is faithful to his children when they're doing well, and he is faithful to his children when they have blown it. He was faithful to Adam and Eve when they blew it in the garden, and even to Cain, who cried out and said, wherever I go, if people find out I've killed my brother, they'll kill me. And God's heart is moved, and God says, I'm going to help you, son. I'm going to help you. When the whole world was drained of righteousness, God kept searching through that needle, for that righteous needle in a haystack of unrighteousness. And Noah's not the first person he did that with, or the last. You see, when you think about what it means to raise children, we have this imagination that our children will grow up and make us look like we're good parents. That when people meet us and then they meet our kids, they will think highly of us because of how well our kids are doing. One of our sons talked to me on the phone one day in his late 20s, early 30s. He said, I want to have a serious conversation with you. I said, okay. He said, do you know how much it hurts when I hear you tell someone that you feel like you failed as a parent? Because if you apparently feel like you failed, children must be the measurement. So that must mean that you think we're failures. Have you thought about that? Now, parents, you know that's not what I meant. But you also know I was wrong. For me to talk about failing as a parent meant that in one way or another, I imagined that I knew enough to stay in control long enough that my kids would make me look good. What God called me to was faithfulness. It was on a Wednesday morning in January of 2006. The semester, second semester, was just beginning. I got a call from the headmaster of our local Christian school where I serve on the board. He said, hey, I just wanted to give you a heads up. One of the young men at our school is being dismissed this morning. It's a drug issue. And they live over in your area. Would you reach out to the family? Well, I'd known this family a long time, and I happened to have the kid's phone number. So I texted this kid. I said, hey, I know it's been a tough morning. I would love to get together for coffee. I texted his parents. By the end of that day, I'd met with all of them. It was a good thing. The following morning, true story, on a Thursday morning, I get a call from the exact same school, same principal, who says, we need to have a conversation. My wife and I go out there. One of our sons, who was a senior at that time, second semester senior, had been smoking weed on campus that morning and was now going to be dismissed. So yet the day before was a practice run. I would have appreciated if the Lord would say, hey, Thursday's going to be kind of tough. I'm going to give you a practice run on Wednesday, see how that goes. So now I'm out there, right? So I'm kind of bummed out. I'm bummed out for a lot of reasons. You know, one of them is he's smoking weed. One of them is he's smoking weed on campus, right? And one of them is he's a second semester senior that's about to get kicked out of the school he's been going to his whole life. And now we're going to have to you get what I'm saying? All of that going on? So I call my dad. And I'm weeping the blues to my father. So my dad, he listens to the whole thing. He's a good listener. My dad said, well, he said, now, first of all, just be glad you're not raising you. All right. Good point. All right. All right. You scored one there. Let's move on. And then he said these words. And this is where I want to leave you with in this first session this morning. He said, did it ever dawn on you that God knew the kind of father your son would need, and he picked you for him? That he knew you'd be the kind of dad that a boy with these struggles would need. And I said to my dad, no, I actually had not thought of that. You know why? Because I didn't want to be the dad of a kid who got kicked out of a Christian school his second semester of his senior year for smoking weed on campus. I didn't want to be a dad of a kid who went through that. You get where I'm coming from? I wanted to Photoshop the picture. You see where I'm headed with this? So that's something that I ministered to somebody else about on Wednesdays, but that wasn't what was going on in my life on Thursdays. And what I had to come to was, the reality is, that one of the reasons that we think we ought to know and we think we're in control is because we're missing the point of parenting. Parenting is about being faithful to the children entrusted to us, whatever is going on in their lives. Whatever is going on in their lives. So that family whose child has the heart issue, they don't want to be in that club, but they're in it, so now what? The family whose daughter has cancer in her gum and doesn't know it till a dentist spots it. Well, that's not the club they wanted to be in, but they're in it now, right? The child who has psychological problems. The child who has addiction problems. You realize that God is looking at you and saying, just follow my lead. I was faithful. You be faithful. And here's the caveat. God could have said, you do realize I actually did know what I was doing, and I could have been in control. So the fact that I didn't choose control might be informative to you. You get it? So, let's see. Let's go back to the pictures. Back up. Okay. So, let's see. I think that's our granddaughter on the right and her friend Chloe on the left. You'll get to know both of them a little bit more later. This is actually, how many of you have recently tied a bow tie? No, I don't mean clipped one on that's already fixed. Yeah, that's what was going on here for about 35 minutes with our son, Jerome. And then we right before he got married. But this is our picture here. So this is our family, okay? So you have the second from the left is our son, Don. He's gay, and that's his partner, Benjamin. And then you have our son, Aaron, next. He was a missionary in Russia. He lives in Atlanta right now with his wife and our two granddaughters. Then our son Jerome in the middle there. To the left of Whitney, to your right, is our daughter Amy, who's doing her PhD in Boston and is a preacher. And so we have a gay son, a black son, and a daughter that's a preacher. That's a trifecta in church. I'm not going to Photoshop my family for you or anyone else. I'm not. Because I'm not going to pretend that I was called to something that I wasn't called to. What I was called to was faithfulness.
Well, man, I'll tell you, you know, you must not have been a very good parent.
Well, I wonder how you would measure that.
You say, well, you know, I mean, you got a kid up there you said was gay. Yeah, and I got a kid up there that I said was a missionary.
Maybe I should have just told you about the missionary, and then you'd think I was a really good parent. But here's the truth. I didn't make him a missionary. So my good parenting didn't make him a missionary.
You see, what we imagine is that good parents are good parents because they made their kids good. And that a parent who has a child that struggles must not be a good parent because their kids didn't come a certain way. So we'll take credit for the part that turned out the way we wanted. You feel where I'm coming from on this? Isn't God interesting that he takes credit for his family? He claims Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Isaac and Ishmael. He claimed Judah and Tamar and the boys. You realize there's only two sets of twins in the Bible that are named, that both of them are named. Jacob and Esau and Judah and Tamar's twins. And they're included in the fourth chapter of Ruth where everyone's reminded, these are David's ancestors. And they're included in Matthew chapter 1. Everyone remember, these are Jesus' ancestors. If you don't want people to know that your kids struggle, why are you putting them in the book? Unless you hope to help a group of parents in Searcy, Arkansas, keep their kids' names in the book as they're faithful no matter what their children are going through. So who's raising who? My guess is while we think we're raising our kids, we would do well to remember our kids are raising us. Jesus helped Mary and Joseph grow up. My kids have helped me grow up. Your kids are helping you grow up. You might want to remember, and I'll talk about this later today, that those of you whose children have already left home, they gave their entire young life to helping you become a decent parent. They gave their whole lives to helping you grow up. They gave their lives to teaching you things. And hopefully, they get a good return on their investment with parents that are still faithful now, even though they're gone from home. So I just ask you to consider, if we lean into, I know it, and I control it, that goes one way. If I lean into faithfulness, I have the posture of God, and I don't have to Photoshop the family he gives me. So thank you for being here today. I look forward to the rest of our time together.